ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। Srimad Bhagavatam, first canto, chapter 9, The Passing Away of Bhishma Dev, text 32. Shri Bhishma Ubacha, okay. Iti Mati Rupakalpita, Iti Matir Upakalpita, Vitrishna Bhagavati Sattvatah Pungave Vibhumni Swa Sukham Upagate Kachit Bihartum Prakritim Upeyusi Upeyusi Jad Bhava Prabaha. Sri Bhishma Ubacha, Iti Mati Rupakalpita Vitrishna Bhagavati Sattata Pungave Vibhumni Sasukham Upagate Kachit Bihartum Prakriti Mupeyushi Jad Bhava Prabaha Iti Mati Rupa Kalpita Vitrishna Bhagavati Sattata Pungave Vibhumni Sasukhamupagate Kachid Vihartum Prakriti Mupeyushi Jad Bhava Pravaha Iti Mati Rupa Kalpita Vitrishna Bhagavati Sattata Pungave Vibhumni Swasukham Upagate Kachid Vihartum Prakriti Mupeyasi Yad Bhava Pravaha Iti Mati Rupa Kalpita Iti Mati Rupa Kalpita Vitrishna Bhagavati Sattata Pungave Vibhumni Sasukham Upagate Kachid Vihartum Prakriti Mupeyushi Jad Bhava Pravaha Shri Bhishma Ubacha
Iti Mati Rupa Kalpita Vitrishna
Iti Mati Rupa Kalpita Vitrishna
Bhagavati Sattvat Pungave Vibhumni
Bhagavati Sattata Pungave Vibhumni
Sasukham Upagate Kachid Vihartum
Sasukham Upagate Kachid Vihartum
Prakriti Upayushi Yad Bhava Pravaha
Prakriti Upayushi Yad Bhava Pravaha श्री भीष्म उवाच श्री भीष्म देव से इति दास मतिः थिंकिंग फीलिंग एंड व्हीलिंग उपकल्पिता इन्वेस्टेड वितृष्णा फ्रीड फ्रॉम ऑल सेंस डिजायर्स भगवती अंटू द पर्सनालिटी ऑफ गॉड हेड सात्वत पुंगवे अंटू द लीडर ऑफ द डिवोटीज विभुम्नि अंटू द ग्रेट स्वसुखम सेल्फ सैटिस्फैक्शन उपगते अंटू ही हु हैज अटेन्ड इट क्वचित sometimes bihartum out of transcendental pleasure prakritim in the material world upeyushi do accept it jad bhava from whom the creation prabaha is made and annihilated. Translation by His Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada. Bhishma Dev said, let me now invest my thinking, feeling and willing, which was so long engaged in different subjects and occupational duties, in the all-powerful Lord Shri Krishna. He is always self-satisfied, but sometimes, being the leader of the devotees, he enjoys transcendental pleasure by descending on the material world, although from him only the material world is created. Please repeat after me. Bhishma Dev said, let me now invest my thinking, feeling and willing, which are so long engaged in different subjects and occupational duties in the all-powerful Lord Shri Krishna. He is always self-satisfied. But sometimes, being the leader of the devotees, he enjoys transcendental pleasure by descending on the material world, although from him only the material world is created. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. Because Bhishma Dev was a statesman, the head of the Kuru dynasty, a great general and a leader of Kshatriyas, his mind was strewn over so many subjects and his thinking, feeling and willing were engaged in different matters. Now, in order to achieve pure devotional service, he wanted to invest all powers of thinking, feeling and willing entirely in the Supreme Being, Lord Krishna. He is described herein as the leader of the devotees and all-powerful. Although Lord Krishna is the original personality of Godhead, he himself descends on earth to bestow upon his pure devotees the boon of devotional service. He descends sometimes as Lord Krishna as he is and sometimes as Lord Chaitanya. Both are leaders of the pure devotees. Pure devotees of the Lord have no desire other than the service of the Lord, and therefore they are called sattvatas. The Lord is the chief among such sattvatas. Bhishma Dev, therefore, had no other desires. Unless one is purified from all sorts of material desires, the Lord does not become one's leader. Desires cannot be wiped out, but they have only to be purified. It is confirmed in the Bhagavad Gita by the Lord Himself that He gives His instructions from within the heart of a pure devotee who is constantly engaged in the service of the Lord. Such instruction is given not for any material purpose, but only for going back home, back to Godhead. Bhagavad Gita 10:10. For the ordinary man who wants to lord it over material nature, the Lord not only sanctions and becomes a witness of activities, but He never gives the non-devotee instructions for going back to Godhead. That is the difference in dealings by the Lord with different living entities, both the devotee and the non-devotee. He is leader of all the living beings as the king of the states. King of the state rules both the prisoners and the free citizens. But his dealings are different in terms of devotees and non-devotees. Non-devotees never care to take any instruction from the Lord, and therefore the Lord is silent in their case. Although he witnesses all their activities and averts them, the necessary results, good or bad. The devotees are above this material goodness and badness. They are progressive on the path of transcendence, and therefore they have no desire for anything material. The devotee also knows Sri Krishna as the original Narayan, because Lord Sri Krishna, by his plenary portion, appears as the Karanadakshay Vishnu, the original source of all material creation. The Lord also desires the association of His pure devotees, and for them only the Lord descends on the earth and enlivens them. The Lord appears out of His own will. He is not forced by the conditions of material nature. He is therefore described here as the Bibhu or the Almighty, for He is never conditioned by the laws of material nature. So, Bhishma Dev is leaving his body. He was very fortunate that at that very critical time when he was about to leave his body, Krishna himself came and stood before him. That is a special mercy that Krishna bestows upon his devotees. He, whether he is present on this planet during his pastimes, or whether he is in his spiritual abode, whether he is in his Prakat Leela or whether he is in his Aprakat Leela, Krishna always comes to his pure devotees when they are about to leave their bodies. Because, after all, in the material nature, everyone has some sort of conditioning. In this material nature, every living entity is conditioned by his material bodies, both gross and subtle. In the material nature, because one has a material body, he is subjected to the needs of the material body. Generally, by the arrangement of material nature, it happens like one gets a material body, and initially the soul and the body is separate. Even though the soul is in the subtle body, the soul and the gross body, or subtle body and the gross body, are separate. And according to the shape of the subtle body or the condition of the subtle body, according to the shape of the subtle body and the condition of the subtle body, a living entity gets a gross body. And in the womb of the mother, by nature's arrangement, a living entity begins to get a gross body. And the gross body develops from a very small little shape, a small little body, or small little lump of flesh, one can say, it begins to develop. And in this way, in the womb of the mother, the living entity gets the body. And then when the body becomes complete, then the body comes out of the mother's womb. And then one learns to adjust himself in his surroundings. A living entity, from his birth, he doesn't know. First thing he learns is how to breathe. Because without breathing he cannot survive. And he cries, and that is actually the first condition of breathing. The baby starts to cry as soon as the baby comes out of the mother's womb. And in this way he learns to breathe. When he was in the mother's womb, there was no need for breathing. He was being provided with all that he needed, from food to oxygen to whatever he needed, came directly from the mother. But as soon as he is born, now he is on his own. He has to learn himself, to adjust himself in the material nature. And the first thing he does is learn how to breathe. And then he learns how to drink from his mother's breasts. That is his first food. And in this way, he learns to adjust himself to this material nature. From his birth onwards, he adjusts through this material body to this material nature. And then, in this way, he becomes more and more entangled in the body. And then he reaches, when he is at his prime of his youth, he is in perfect, his soul is in perfect harmony with his body, provided he has a healthy body. Generally, in one's youth, one has the most healthy body. And then gradually his attachment to the body begins to diminish. And then the body becomes old. And when the body becomes old, means the living entity, the soul, doesn't actually have that kind of control over the body. And by nature's arrangement again, the body becomes weak, the body becomes diseased, and the different organs of the body don't function properly. And in this way, the nature actually makes arrangement for him to become detached from the gross material body. And in this way he comes to the point of death. And at that time, generally, by nature's arrangement, one gradually comes to the point of death. Old age and death. And at the time of death, the soul actually gets a chance You become free from the influence of the body, from the bondage of the body. Therefore, it is important that one understands that this old age is actually an arrangement by nature to become free from the bondage of the body. And one should, this is how it is very important that one learns to live according to the arrangement of nature. If the nature said, nature gave us the body, nature provided us with everything that was necessary for the body. And so, if the nature says that, okay, now there is the time to become free from the bondage of the body, we should accept that. But unfortunately, people, what happens, they don't want to accept that they're getting old. Even when they're old, they want to remain young. And that is the unfortunate state of affairs of materialistic culture. Javat jivet sukham jivet. Live happily all the time. As long as you are alive. And they're making, in the name of medical advancement, in the name of science, they're trying to make all kinds of arrangements to remain in the body, no matter how dilapidated and devastated the body is. The body is almost dead, and they are just making all kinds of arrangements to keep the body going, keep the body alive. With the artificial, all kinds of artificial arrangements. And why they want to live like that? They want to enjoy the material nature. Even though the body has become old, they still want to enjoy the material nature. The body is not capable to enjoy. The way one can enjoy at his youth, one cannot enjoy when he becomes old. Jai Sri Sri Radha Madan Mohan. Naturally, one cannot enjoy the same way when one becomes old. But still, they are trying to make all kinds of arrangements to be young, even though the body has become old. They invented all kinds of arrangements, transplantations of organs, and various kinds of drugs and things, like just to remain alive, just to not only remain alive, just to continue to enjoy. And then finally they don't want to die, even the body is dead. Now with all kinds of artificial arrangements they are keeping the body going. The body is lying in bed for months together, can't move, can't eat, but still with this artificial arrangement they are keeping the body going. The soul is still imprisoned in the body. But when we approach the Vedic scriptures, Vedic literature, then we get a very clear understanding of what this body is meant for. And what are the characteristics of the body? What are the different kinds of bodies? Materialistic people don't even know the difference between material and spiritual body. They don't even know the existence of the spirit soul. What to speak of the difference between the material body and the spirit soul. And they don't even know that the material body has two types of body, gross body and the subtle body. And at the time of death, the gross body is left behind. But the subtle body carries the soul to the next destination. The subtle body doesn't die. The subtle body is also semi-permanent. Subtle body doesn't die. Subtle body can only be transformed. Like in a gross body, at one point in time we leave the body. The soul leaves the body. But the soul cannot do that with the subtle body. Departure of the soul from the subtle body is not sudden or abrupt. It is gradual. And how? It is actually by engagement in spiritual activity, especially through devotional service, the subtle body is transformed into spiritual body. Or one can say that the subtle body dissolves. It dissolves. The mind, when the mind is engaged in thinking about Krishna, the mind actually becomes spiritualized. The mind becomes transformed into spiritual consciousness. Intelligence, when engaged in devotional service, becomes spiritual awareness and ability to perform devotional service. Buddhi yogam, dadami buddhi yogam tam, yena mam upajantate, teshan satate yuktanam, bhajatan pritipurvakam. Dadami buddhi yogam tam jena mam upajantite. By which? Jena mam upajantite. With this, when the buddhi, with the transcendental intelligence is received, which is actually not different from devotional service, that actually brings one to Krishna. Dadami buddhi jena, by which mam upajantite, is brought unto me. The spirit soul is brought unto Krishna with the spiritual intelligence, buddhi yogam. And in this way, when becomes engaged in serving Krishna, when one becomes a servant of Krishna, then he becomes free from the bondage of false ego. His false ego disappears because his real identity becomes manifest. Jiver Swarup Hai, Krishna Nitya Das. So in this way, we can see by the process of Manmana Bhavo, by engaging the mind in Krishna's service, the mind becomes spiritualized. By being engaged constantly in devotional service, Satata Yuktanam, Bhajatam Priti Purvakam, his intelligence becomes spiritualized, dadami buddhi yogam tam, and the false ego also disappears when one becomes situated in his original identity as the eternal servant of Krishna. So a person at that stage, we can see, when one becomes properly engaged in devotional service, through the proper practice of devotional service, one becomes free from the subtle body. This is the way to become free from subtle body. There is no other way we can become free from subtle body. Even actually not even any by any other spiritual means even. Like the yogis, they may think that they are going to get free of their subtle body. But actually the subtle bondage becomes even more intensified because the false ego becomes more and more powerful. Only by surrender to Krishna one can get rid of his false ego. One can try to engage his mind or free his mind from the bondage of matter. One can try to engage his intelligence into spiritual activities or this process of yoga and all. But the false ego, by the process of yoga, the false ego actually becomes inflated. It's only through devotional service that one can be properly rid. One can get rid of the bondage of his subtle body. And at that stage, our living entity is dwelling in his gross body, apparently gross body, free from the bondage of subtle body. That stage is called Swarup Siddhi. Swarup Siddhi. The perfection of one's Swarup or spiritual identity. And at that time he is, that is the time when he is considered to be a pure devotee. Or when pure devotee means a pure spirit soul is living in the apparently gross material body. But the question is his body, material body, is it material? Is his apparently gross body, is it material? Answer is no. As Prabhupada says, just as in contact with fire, iron becomes red hot. When the iron becomes red hot, is it iron or fire? So similarly, when the spirit soul is liberated from the bondage of his subtle body, although dwelling in an apparently gross body, his gross body is not a material body any longer. It is this gross body also spiritualized. And then the gross body has a specific duration. The gross body lives for, say, for a human being, a gross body lives for 100 years. So, at the end of the tenure of his existence in this material nature, when the soul leaves the gross body, then what happens? Either Vishnu Dutas come or Krishna himself comes. A devotee, that's why Ante Narayana Smriti. Remembering Krishna, a devotee who always remembers Krishna, naturally will remember Krishna at the time of death. And that remembrance is not different from perceiving Krishna face to face. But in the case of Bhishma Dev, he was exceptionally fortunate that Krishna came personally and stood in front of him. Now Bhishma Dev, Prabhupada is pointing out that Bhishma Dev's mind, although he was a very exalted personality, but because he was a statesman, because he was a general, his mind was engaged in all kinds of activities, worldly activities. But when Bhishma was lying in the bed of arrows for so many days, he was free from all those turbulence of his mind. Bhishma Dev's character is actually very exemplary. Although he was a devotee of Krishna, but he could not completely side with Krishna because there was a consideration of morality. Because Bhishma considered, he was more involved in the consideration of morality, ethics, what should be done according to the scriptural injunctions. So although Bhishma Dev was a very noble person, he could not completely side with Krishna because he considered that, well, I am a Kshatriya and I am in the court of the king, so my business is to side with the king. Going against the king is an offense. Going against the person who has maintained me for so long is a sinful act. So Bhishma Dev was caught up with all that, all those considerations. Even when Draupadi was being insulted in the assembly, Bhishma Dev couldn't stand up because he saw that it is not befitting him to go against the king. Duryodhana was the king and he considered that his duty is to follow the king. So even when he saw that the activity was
improper. He didn't stand up. There's a very wonderful anecdote in this respect. When Bhishma Dev was instructing Yudhishthir Maharaj about the duties, then Bhishma Dev noticed that Draupadi was smiling. So he asked Draupadi, "Why are you smiling?" Draupadi said, "Where was your wisdom when I was being publicly insulted in the royal assembly? You were there, but at that time you didn't intervene, you did not try to stop them." And Bhishma's answer was, "At that time, because I was eating the food given by Duryodhana, the sinful Duryodhana, my consciousness became contaminated." So we can see that how intense is the influence of taking food, how karma is carried by food, especially grains. That's why you don't take grains cooked by outside people. And even worse than grain is salt. In Bengali there is a saying, "Nun khai jar gun gaitar." So Bhishma Dev accepted that point. He said, "Yes, at that time, because I was eating the food given by sinful Duryodhana, my consciousness was affected. But since I had been lying in the bed of arrows for so long, all those bad blood has been drained out of my body. And now my consciousness, I have been situated in proper consciousness." So it doesn't matter what one has been in the past, what one has done in the past, that is not important. What really matters is what is the condition of one's consciousness at present. Therefore, Vaishnavas shouldn't be judged according to his past. Actually, one of the offenses to the Vaishnava, one of the Vaishnava aparad, is to judge a Vaishnava according to his past activity. To judge a Vaishnava according to his birth, to judge a Vaishnava according to his physical condition, and to judge a Vaishnava according to his past activity. These three are Vaishnava aparad. Vaishnava should be seen just the way he is at this point in time. Because the Krishna consciousness purifies the condition of the consciousness. And when one is pure, he is pure. So what really matters is one becomes purified, not what one was before. One may have been pure in the past, but if he is contaminated now, then we judge him according to that. But if one was contaminated in the past, but has become purified now, we also judge him according to that. And we must understand that this process of Krishna consciousness is all purifying. But one must practice the process properly. Then only he will become purified. If we practice the process properly, yes, purification will take place. If we don't practice it properly, koti janma kore jodi naam sankirtan tobuto na pai Krishna pade premodhan. One may be practicing Krishna consciousness for millions of lifetimes. He won't get Krishna prema. So the process must be practiced properly. And If we practice the process properly, what will happen? The consciousness will become purified. It's only a matter of consciousness. And it's a matter of consciousness in which way? Either the consciousness is flowing towards the matter, material nature, through this gross material body and its senses, or it is projected onto Krishna through devotional service. Nanna pantha ayanaya vidyate. There is no other way. Only two ways. Or the third way is the state of sleep, unconscious state. Either we are materially motivated or we are spiritually situated. Either of these two. Either materially motivated or spiritually situated. Material motivation means our false ego, with our false ego we are trying to consider how we are going to lord over this material nature, how we are going to enjoy this material nature. And the spiritual consciousness is engaged in devotional service to Krishna. Now, when we become engaged in devotional service to Krishna, we may not become purified overnight, but if we stick to the process, gradually it will happen. And that is why it is so important to remain in the association of devotees. Because if we remain in the association of devotees, we are in that environment which is spiritualized. If we are alone, we may forget. Illusory energy of the Lord is so powerful that we may forget and forget about Krishna consciousness, forget about our mission, forget about our duties and get carried away by the material nature, by the illusory energy of the Lord. But if we remain in the association of devotees, then we'll be reminded. Even if we have some defects, doesn't matter. If we practice the process in the association of devotees, we make advancement. Because in the association of devotees, we'll be constantly reminded what is our mission, what is our goal. It happens, we notice, like devotees. I have seen many, many times, like very powerful, very sincere devotees, very advanced devotees. When they leave the association of devotees, what happened? I'll give you an example. I knew one of our god brothers, who was a sannyasi, a very, very advanced devotee, very strict in his sadhana. He used to recite Sanskrit verses, although he was American. He used to recite Sanskrit verses like nobody's business. And then, after Srila Prabhupada's disappearance, at one point he left ISKCON. And whenever I used to go to America, I used to meet with him. And I found out where he was, and he left ISKCON, but I found out that he was staying in the house of one devotee's parents. In the backyard, they had a house, they had a room. Like in America, you find that, like, they have the main house, and then they have a lawn at the back, and then there is some small facilities. So he used to live in that place, and he was very fixed up. He had his deities, he had his shilas, and he was worshipping. I was very happy to hear that he's still so fixed up. Then I went, next year I went to America. I decided to meet him. And I found out that he is now studying law. He went to the university to study law. And Although he is studying, his sadhana was very strict. He was worshipping the deities. The next year, I went, I found that he is now working as a lawyer's assistant. Then he goes to work. Still his sadhana, now his sadhana is not that steady. Goes to work and there's a lot of pressure. And the year after that, oh yeah, and that time I found out that he actually has a girlfriend. And the year after that I found that he got married. So, I mean, at least for him, it took him 4 or 5 years. Because he was a very steady devotee, very sincere devotee. But in most cases, they just drift away when they fall into Maya, just a matter of a few days. But if he remained, I mean, such a powerful devotee, such an advanced devotee, ultimately, eventually drifted away like that. Of course, we hope that they'll come back one day and be situated again. Now, that's another thing. Like when a devotee comes back, he will begin from where he ended. Even though one may fall into Maya, but when he comes back, his spiritual assets will not go in vain. He'll begin from where he ended, where he left. But it is safer not to leave. Because, yes, we'll come back to Krishna consciousness. But when? What is the guarantee that we may come back in this life? And if we don't, then who knows how many lifetimes again we'll have to go through before we come back to Krishna consciousness again. But if one remains in the association of devotees, then what happens? When one remains in the association of devotees, I have seen many devotees who are very weak. Many very weak devotees, because they are in the association of devotees, they are still carrying on year after year after year. So this is the difference. Maya and spiritual platform. Material nature, spiritual nature. Maya is very strong. Alone we can't fight against Maya. But if we are in the association of devotees, then Maya won't be able to do anything to us. In this respect also there is a very important consideration. That when we are in the association of devotees, then why Maya can't do anything? Because although Maya is very strong, Mamo Maya Durattaya, Maya is very powerful because it is Krishna's energy. And it is Krishna's divine energy, Daivi Maya, Daivi Prakriti. But Krishna's association of Krishna's devotees is Krishna's internal potency. Maya is Krishna's external potency, and the association of devotees is Krishna's internal potency. Therefore, if we remain in the association of Krishna's devotees, then Maya cannot do anything. Because we are being protected by Krishna's internal energy. So, it's very important therefore that we always make it a point to remain in the association of devotees. And that's why Prabhupada so systematically organized this structure or created this institution of ISKCON. So that devotees all over the world can have the association of devotees. If we are not in the association of devotees, then we are so vulnerable. We can fall down any moment. Maya is so strong. But what happens when you're in the association of devotees? Even though we may fall down, even though there may be a possibility of our falling down, what will the devotees do? Devotees will rescue us. Now what are you doing? Hey, that's Maya. And they will drag us back into Krishna consciousness. Therefore we always must respect and remain grateful to Srila Prabhupada for giving us this wonderful association in the form of the International Society for Krishna Consciousness. No matter wherever we are, actually nowadays, wherever we go, we find association of devotees. Whether we go to America, whether you go to Europe, whether you go to China, whether you go to Russia, whether you go to Africa, whether we go to the remotest corners, even if we go to Greenland, the association of devotees are there. And not only association of devotees, such exalted association of devotees. Getting up in the morning for Mangal Arati. The other day one very big businessman was telling me that he was so impressed, and he was really gloating about it. Like he said that he went to Kenya and he stayed, or he went to our temple. And he saw that the African devotees are offering the worship, offering the arati. And the sight that an African devotee, because in his mind he couldn't even imagine that such a thing could happen. And that's what used to happen early days, Prabhupada, when he brought the Americans to India. People were so impressed that the Americans are practicing Krishna consciousness. And because they can't relate to that. An Indian person doing worship, doing arati is okay, it's understandable. But an American doing the arati, performing yoga, doing all kinds of spiritual activities, chanting the holy name, reciting the verses. I remember in early days when I became a devotee, one of my father's friends was telling me that he was so impressed when he saw one American. He was reciting the verses from Bhagavad Gita so eloquently. He was speaking, and I mean, most really that devotee later on, I knew that I saw that devotees know a few verses. But they speak in such a way that people get an impression that he must know the entire Bhagavad Gita by heart. And that was Prabhupada's training actually. Prabhupada used to teach us that when you speak, you must substantiate what you are saying with the quotations from the scriptures. Then only people will get used to this. I may come and say something, but what is the validity of that? But if I can substantiate that statement with a verse from the scripture, and also Prabhupada used to say that the advantage is memorizing the verses and quoting the verses. While you are quoting the verse will give you the substance to speak on. So Prabhupada taught us, like we memorize some the verses from the scriptures and we speak on that. And simple statements like Sarva Dharman Parityajya Mamekam Sharanam. Everyone knows that verse. Everyone in ISKCON knows that verse, but not out there. So when we recite that verse, they see that, whatever he's speaking, he has some very sound foundation behind what he's talking about. So the point is that this is the unique gift of Srila Prabhupada. He spread Krishna consciousness all over the world in such an effective way And in order to sustain that, Prabhupada created the International Society for Krishna Consciousness. And this International Society for Krishna Consciousness is the Sadhu Sangha, Association of Devotees. And if we remain in ISKCON, our spiritual life will be safe. If we leave ISKCON, no matter who we are running a big risk. Maya is so powerful. Maya is so powerful. Maya can take us away any moment. But Maya is powerful, but one thing is that Maya is not cruel. It's not that Maya wants to take us away. Maya tests us, how serious we are about our Krishna consciousness. Actually, if Maya wanted to take us away, Maya's illusory energy is so powerful that she could take anybody away. But those who are serious in Krishna consciousness, Maya will become kind to her. Those who are serious, Maya will help. Maya becomes pleased. Maya becomes very happy when she sees that someone is becoming a devotee of Krishna. Because who is Maya? Maya is Krishna's internal potency also. Maya is Krishna's sister. That's what Gop Kumar, when he was leaving the material nature, finally he came to the outermost layer of this universe. And that was the layer of Maya Devi, personified. And Maya Devi was asking him, why are you leaving? Why don't you stay here and enjoy? Maya herself is offering him the opportunity to enjoy. But what did Gop Kumar do? Gop Kumar offered obeisances and said, please bless me that I can become properly engaged in the service of your brother, Krishna. And that is what Maya actually is. Obviously, she wants us to become engaged in Krishna's service. But if we become nonsense, then she will punish us. Also, what is Maya's punishment? It may seem like it's punishment, but actually what Maya is trying to do, trying to keep us in track to go to Krishna, to stay on the path. Like sometimes, the shepherd, when he takes the sheep, what does he do? Or a cowboy, a cowherd boy, when he takes the cows, if the cow or the sheep runs out of the track, then what? He goes and he has a stick, but he doesn't beat it. And whatever the beating is, actually to bring it back onto the track. So Maya is beating us to bring us onto the track. Become Krishna conscious, become a devotee. Why are you going to become? Become a devotee of Krishna. And when you become a devotee of Krishna, then no punishment. Taputrayan unmulanam. Well, as soon as we take to the process of Krishna consciousness, no more suffering. Therefore, devotional, one of the first characteristics of devotional service is kleshagni. Kleshagni. No more klesha. Devotional service destroys all klesha. So if we do not want to suffer, the intelligent course to take is just become a devotee. And then there won't be any more suffering. So this is the most wonderful arrangement by the Supreme Personality of Godhead and through His pure devotee Srila Prabhupada. He has blessed us in such a wonderful way. And to become a devotee, we do not have to become a big scholar, we do not have to become a very powerful person, we do not have to become an influential person, we do not have to become rich. We do not need any of those qualifications. None of these material qualifications are necessary. What is necessary is that we simply become simple and humble and submit ourselves to Krishna. Submission, surrender is the only thing that is needed, nothing else, to become a devotee. Wherever we are, whether we are young or old, whether we are man or woman, whether we are rich or poor, whether we are wise or Ignorant doesn't matter. All we need to do is just surrender. And then Krishna will take care of the rest. Once a devotee asked Srila Prabhupada, Prabhupada, what if I cannot remember Krishna at the time of death? Prabhupada said that if you sincerely practice the process of Krishna consciousness, at the time of death, Krishna himself will come and take you back. Even if you forget Krishna, Krishna will not forget. He will come and take you. So that is how reassuring this process of Krishna consciousness is. And through Bhishma Dev we are seeing, like what Bhishma Dev is praying at that time, that now let me be free from all my material attachments. And let my mind, with all its thinking, feeling and willing, become engaged in. Let me project all that into Krishna's lotus feet. No more material attachments. Nothing to look back. Now let me look towards Krishna. Because now is the time when the gate of the spiritual sky is opening up in front of us. And not only the gate will open, if we are properly situated in proper consciousness, then Krishna himself will come and take us back to the spiritual sky. The gate will open and we don't have to go. Krishna's messenger will come or Krishna himself will come to take. Just like Dhruva Maharaj, when the time came, the chariot came from the spiritual sky with two Vishnu Dutas. And Dhruva Maharaj saw that they came to take him. So he took a bath, he said goodbye to all the sainted personalities there in Badrikashram. He circumambulated the chariot 3 times. And just he was about to climb onto the chariot, he saw that death is standing there. But how death was standing there? Death was standing with folded hands. But please bless me. So that is how death comes. That is how death approaches to a devotee. With folded hands to receive the devotee's blessing. And then, what did Dhruva Maharaj do? Dhruva Maharaj put his foot on death's head to climb onto the chariot. So this is how death comes to a devotee. Yes, devotee also dies. But how does he die? He dies in this way. Putting his lotus feet on the head of death to climb onto the chariot to go back to the spiritual sky. Hare Krishna, all glories to Srila Prabhupada. Does anybody have any question or comment? Yes, Srimi. The worst carrier of karma. How is that? How is copper a very good conductor of electricity? It's its nature, right? Different elements have different, you can say, like in scientific terms, it will be a consideration of resistance. If something has greater resistance, then it's a bad conductor. Like gold is a very good conductor of electricity. Why? Because the resistance is very little, practically nil. So electricity just goes straight through. Whereas wood is a bad conductor of electricity. Why? Because there is a resistance. The electricity cannot flow through it. So karma flows very nicely through grain and even more effectively through salt. Therefore, not only don't take grains, but try to avoid any kind of salty food. Whereas milk is not that bad. Milk products you can buy from outside and offer to the Lord. Why? Because the milk products are, because milk is not a good carrier of karma. Okay? Yes? You see, generally what happens after death, along with the subtle body, the spirit soul goes into a region called Andhatamishra. Tamishra means darkness, and Andhatamishra means deep, deep darkness. And when one is in the region of deep darkness, everyone has a mobile phone and do not have the sense to even switch it off. From tomorrow, make it a point to switch off all your, whoever has mobile phones, switch off your mobile phone. So when one remains in that region, his memory gets wiped out, right? Like for example, when you are awake, you remember things more clearly. But after you fall asleep and wake up in the morning, the previous day's activities are completely forgotten, mostly forgotten. So this is what generally happens. But when one is spiritually enlivened, spiritually situated, then his memory doesn't get obliterated. He carries his memory. And like for example, Bharat Maharaj, when he got a next life, he got a deer's body. But although in an animal body, he had his memory intact from his previous life. Right? He remembered what happened, that he was a king, and how he became attached to a deer, and as a result of that, at the time of death, he remembered a deer, he thought about the deer, and as a result of that, he got a deer body. And he didn't want to make the same mistake. So what he did, although in a deer body, he stayed near the ashram of the saintly people, and when they would discuss about Krishna Katha, he would just sit there and listen to them. We see some animals now also in Vrindavan. Sometimes we come across some animals. You can see that they are some advanced soul. Like there is a dog, I remember, whenever I used to go to, on Ekadasi, when I used to be in Vrindavan, I used to go on a parikram with the devotees. During Kartik, I used to spend this month of Kartik in Vrindavan. And on Ekadasi, we would go for a parikrama. On Ekadasi day, Vrindavan parikrama in the morning. And one dog would come, and he would join us in the parikrama. And he would walk all the way to on Ekadasi, do the parikrama with us. So, yeah, devotees carry their memories in most cases.
What is the right way of chanting?
What is the right way of chanting nicely? Prabhupada used to say that hear and chant. Chant and hear. Right? Just hear when you are chanting. Concentrate on the sound vibration. Just focus on the sound vibration. Bhaktivinoda Thakur says in that respect that I do not know what an inconceivable power the holy name has. Entering through the passage of my ears, it came to the region of my heart and started to shower nectar. So the holy name entered through the passage of our ears comes to the region of the heart and starts to shower nectar. And then, Ridoy hoite bole, jubhar agrete chale, shabdurupe nache anukhan. Then it rises from the depth of my heart. And coming to the tip of my tongue, it starts to dance in the form of sound vibration. So it is Krishna who starts to dance on the tip of our tongue when you are chanting. So this is how we have to focus, we have to concentrate on hearing. And then the rest will happen. Holy name is Krishna. If we submit ourselves to proper hearing, then Krishna will manifest in the form of the holy name. And then it will be He in the form of the sound vibration that will start dancing on the tip of our tongues. Hare Krishna, all glory is to Srila Prabhupada.